Hello and welcome back to the Motor Racing Passion Podcast. I'm Luke Blattman. I've got Daniel Blattman with me, and we're going to take a bit of a look back on round one of the TCR Australia series from Sandown a couple of weeks back. But something that's sort of really stolen the thunder of the first round was the announcement that the TCR World Tour, which was so popular, particularly at Eastern Creek last year in terms of how good the racing was, it's been announced that's not coming back to Australia this year. That took the wind out of the sails after the first round, didn't it, Daniel?
Yeah, no, if we think you go back to our podcast previewing the Sandown round one, too, and obviously we spoke about obviously the momentum that brought the season, the championship last season, and kind of the extra intensity that it brought to the racing and seeing that carrying on through the year. So to have that as the end of season kind of climax of the series, and then to get through round one and Saturday afternoon or Friday afternoon be floating around Bathurst for the 12 hour and to get that text message, it was it was pretty deflating. And I don't think I've fully digested it yet, but no, I think it's it was the hardest point was getting him here, and then after a year to obviously be impacted through the shipping issues, it's pretty deflating. Yeah,
well, that was obviously the reason that's been given, the shipping problems, which it's definitely an issue at the moment. We saw at the 12 hour it affected at least three cars from getting to the Bathurst 12 hour, and obviously, we don't have the financials in terms of how the Sydney Motorsport Park round and the Bathurst round did last year in terms of dollars. Obviously, the crowds were small, which people have pointed out ad nauseum. But it was definitely an event that I think, particularly the Sydney Motorsport Park round, it encapsulated what the TCR World Tour was always supposed to be about, in that the regulars of the World Series fighting with the locals. And I think that was the biggest advertisement for the whole concept was Sydney Motorsport Park last year, especially under lights. So from that angle, I mean, you would have thought WSC would have been, and Marcello Lotti, like, they would be upset to lose this round of the series.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, too, I think they're genuine in saying, like, the shipping issues, just because, as you touched on, we had the Bathurst impact, we've had the WEC impact with the prologue, we've had a number of other series that that's impacted on. So I think it's genuine in that sense. But to your second point around the reception, I think, from Marcello Lotti and the World Tour organisers, everyone's account, they loved being here last year. The racing was incredible. The stop on the way to Macau made sense in a certain extent, in regionally kind of way. Obviously, logistically, it proved some challenges. But no, I think they're genuinely disappointed to not have a draw card like Bathurst and Mount Panorama on the schedule. But as you said, secondly, I think Sydney Motorsport Park, as a product of the way the race has panned out, was probably the high point of that World Tour part as well. Obviously, Will Brown's success, but even some of the others. You had Aaron Cameron up there battling out, Josh Buchan, and those types. So yeah, I think it was a high point for it. And I think the championship will notice the Australian swing not being there. So we've just got to hope and pray and, get behind everyone to get it back in 25.
We sort of saw firsthand at the conclusion of last year's third race when we wandered up the pit lane and the international team started packing up, and we were out the front of Cyan Racing with the Lincoln Co's when one of the team bosses gave the crew a bit of a motivational talk about how to pack everything up, because all the gear and all the cars were going back to base because they had a completely separate set of cars and gear that was in Macau, because Macau was a week later. So logistically wise, I mean, just from a cost point, you could certainly imagine some of the teams may have said once was enough in terms of that angle. Like, I mean, Cyan Racing, straight away they needed eight cars just for the last three rounds.
Yeah. And then if they carried any spares, whatever, too. Yeah, don't disagree with that. My only thing is, though, it's like when they signed the original deal, that was all known. Do you know what I mean? So it's like I'm not sure what 2023 would have provided that they didn't think. Do you know what I mean? If they thought it was feasible for 2023, I don't know what would have been known or unknown for that period. And I also think that was one of the advantages. Like, you look at the calendar last year to this year, and obviously it's shifted in terms of being less European in 2024. But I think being able to knock off two races in Australia and then head to Macau, I think is actually a strength in terms of like a bit of bang for your buck. You actually ship the cars to Australia and you get two rounds. Now, maybe in the future, all going well, I was going to say New Zealand as well, like to make it less Australian specific, but then you are just adding in another shipping element, which is probably unnecessary. So, coming back to the point, I don't think the experiences 2023, if it was viable to do in 2023, I don't know what it changed. And also, if you're looking at a world tour like this that encapsulates 7, 8, 9 rounds, I think shipping and that kind of use of cars and things like that is, if that's going to be a factor to not do it, then I don't know how traveling to South America or traveling, to Africa or things like that make it any different. So.
The only other option in terms of the Macau issue would be to move the Bathurst International somewhere to another time of year. But I don't think you can fit the International in at a different time of the year because it basically is too cold to do it in the middle of winter.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. My only thought to that is that we did a 12-hour in May, and that wasn't the all sun and rainbows and stuff, but it was, that was manageable. But I do wonder, though, as well, is the other option going December or, Like, October's obviously a write-off. You could go...
Go after Macau.
And flip it that way. I can't imagine you lessen any of those challenges, but obviously Macau's important. And, that's what I get as well. As much as Bathurst was kind of like a marquee event for the World Tour and they're disappointed not to have that event with all the history or the circuit with all the history, I think obviously Macau provides a little more prestige at the current time. But, yeah, going in December and allowing that time, I don't think that actually makes that much of a difference to the logistical challenge and the shipping challenge. So that's something that we'll have to put on. But, yeah, I don't think November's necessarily the issue.
I guess the other thing too, Bathurst is a marquee track for the series, but Macau is a marquee event. The Gaia race is, like, established, a lot of history, whereas they were building history in terms of a race meeting at Bathurst. So if you were going to have to choose one, which maybe they had to, it's sort of a no-brainer, really.
I don't think anyone can fault them. Well, no one's saying that Bathurst and the Sydney Motorsport Park ground should have come at the expense of that. I think it's more like Macau is Macau and it's staying. So what for 25, what needs to be done to make this manageable for the teams around that? But
Marcello Lotti and the TCR World Tour organisers have been very vocal in their press releases that the intention is to come back to Australia in 2025. If we're realists, do you see that happening, or is it?
Could it be
a matter of once it's you've had it and once it goes, it's almost harder to get it back?
Yeah, and that's very much always the risk. And, gentlemen, you do have to have a element of realism about it that's to put the best of intentions. And obviously, the statements that have come out from the World Tour, Motorsport Australia, ARG and TCR Australia have been very supportive. And, for 2025, this just being Scott's stopgap issue regarding the shipping. Until you see it, you've got to just have some question marks around that. What I am hopeful of, though, as well, is obviously everyone's committed to the event in 2024. So it's not like the event's going away, right?
Yeah.
So that does give me some cause for optimism in terms of the event will run in 2024. Obviously, there's some avenues around how do we maintain some international TCR presence. And I'm sure we'll chat about that soon because I think there's some avenues around that just to keep the momentum, keep the presence, and then that does make it easier. Obviously, with what the World Tour has got planned to, you know, alleviate some of the logistical issues for 25. So that's if the whole event disappeared, almost like an SNP one, yeah, that would be obviously a bigger issue to come back from. But I think, I think there's still a platform to launch the World Tour into the 2025 season.
Something that'll play a part, I guess, is how the World Tour develops this year, because as you said, they've sort of changed tack a little bit, and there's going to be less rounds run with TCR Europe. They've got a round at Mid-Ohio, which very few details have come out so far, but I mean, one rumor I read was that the sort of the World Tour cars would race as part of the Michelin Pilot Challenge race, which is an IMSA support race, which A, runs on Michelin tires, not the Kumos, and it had been an endurance race with GD4 cars, obviously, which is a very different tack compared to how it was in 2023.
Yeah, and that, like, I've seen a few comments around that. Yeah, you know, like, out of all the things, why Mid-Ohio? Do you know what I mean? Why that section? I think it's obviously great to be in America, but yeah, there's still a few details to be fleshed out around that.
And similarly, the race in Marrakesh, like, we haven't heard much about TCR World Tour full-time entries for this year. There was an announcement a couple of days ago that Goat Racing is running a pair of JAS Motorsport Hondas. Obviously, the Lincoln Co. entries would be in there. But other than that, there hasn't been a lot of announcement of entries. So you wonder what will form the backbone of the entry at, say, a Marrakesh.
Well, can I just say to start with, having a race meeting in Morocco is, I absolutely love it.
Oh, it's great. And going right back to the World Touring Car Championship in the in sort of the late 2000s, early 2010s, that was a staple of the World Touring Car Championship, the round at Marrakesh. So it's good to have it back, because it's a good little track as well.
Yeah, no, I think that part of the world's absolutely amazing too. But I did note that with the announcement during the week, with the updated schedule, with the removal of the two Australian rounds, though, that the promo photo had the four Super Cheap Auto Australia Australian cars, which I thought, cars from that meeting. So I thought that was absolutely wild. Enjoyed that.
I think it was the photo taken on the Thursday of the Sydney Motorsport Park. Yeah,
so good. Loved it. I did see that as well. That's obviously, like, April's not that long away. Like, going mid-April for the Vallelonga opening up the season, and then heading off to Morocco. But yeah, goat racing, no drivers. Like, imagine, like, out of your side, imagine those teams will roll over, kicking off in Italy for the opening round. Obviously, be very well supported locally. But yeah, so I think some more detail following that would have been quite helpful.
So in terms of the Bathurst International, obviously the Sydney Motorsport Park event as a whole has been cancelled, and the TCR round that was to take place there, TCR Australia round, has just been rolled into the Speed Series event that was already scheduled for October. So that doesn't really make a difference. It stays as round six of the series, and actually it fills the gap we talked about in a way that we talked about last podcast between what was going to be between rounds five and six. It means less of a gap between five, six, and seven. But the Bathurst International for this year, what are its options? We'll start with for this year and then look to the future. But WSC has said that it hopes that the international component can be retained TCR wise for the event, obviously not in a World Tour capacity, but
so this is where I think, well, so put aside, obviously the original aim of the Bathurst International was that two driver 500k race, which, I mean, if we can ever get to that, I think that works in either scenario, the full World Tour or this interim measure, right? But we know that obviously for reasons in terms of the running gear and the makeup of the cars and things like that at the moment, it's not actually feasible. How that looks, obviously, with the new model cars coming each year and how that evolves, maybe that's something that becomes a bit more attainable, but obviously not an option for 2024. So I think, and this has been thrown around a bit on some of the discussion areas out there, but almost borrowing from one of the worst race meetings of all time, but when, you know, the Gold Coast 600 back in the day, Once when IndyCar rolled up and then A1GP ceased to compete, that then the organisers brought in internationals and paired them with Australian cars or drivers. Yeah. So obviously that was a two-driver kind of format. I think the best scenario for 2024 is the local series and the local teams, which we've got some 15 cars at round one, but we've got some strong teams supplying them across GRM, David Wall Racing, Ashley Seward Motorsport, and Hyundai, well, HMO Customer Racing, getting that correct. We've actually got some strong teams that can scale up and scale down cars. So I think provided there are suitable numbers of cars, and obviously with the new Peugeots and things coming on and Gary Rogers producing those, I think each of those teams making available a car for an international and I think this is the key part, so using, it could be any internationals, but I think utilising one of those that we actually got to get to know last year, Jan Elashays, your Girolamis, your Ted Bjorks, your Norbys, Azaconas, Rob Huff, I haven't seen where he's wound up yet too, obviously, but those guys at the pointy end of the field, stick them in some local cars and let them go head-to-head with the Australians. I think that, A, from a financial point of view, it's the most feasible. And then also, too, we have cars in Australia. We've talked about that in previous podcasts. So it's more just getting them active, that the teams can prepare them, and we can go from there.
Obviously, with WSC trying to encourage support, you'd hope maybe they might be able to lean on a manufacturer to send an extra Honda to Australia, or an extra Hyundai, or, you know, an extra Cupra or something.
Absolutely.
To send one down to send a driver with it.
And a bit like, so for example, we look at last year, Honda sent a new car out for Girolami to run the two World Tour rounds last year. That car stayed, and now it's in the hands of Brad Harris. So, like, do you know what I mean? I think that, like, that can work two ways too. Obviously, relies on the manufacturer, but hopefully the World Tour can leverage those a little bit. For example, what are those Audis doing that ran last year? Send them down, and then we can actually, do you know what I mean? Almost they roll on, and then it's an extra car that is available to use down here.
Spending other people's money is what we do best on this podcast.
It should be our tagline, shouldn't it?
Well, I mean, before I go on that, I mean, basically we need more cars. Like 15 cars aren't going to be enough for Bathurst Eve for a sprint race. They need to add more. But by the same
time, that should be, like, I mean, that needs to be the minimum.
But also, for instance, assuming Josh Buchan goes back into the later model Hyundai, obviously that leaves a spare i30 hatch. But is someone like Norby going to come all the way to Australia to drive an old hatch?
That's where you want the manufacturers to obviously help out and respond. But I also do think, without once again speaking for them, the general desire from those top drivers last year to race at Bathurst was pretty high. Yeah. So they're not going to come and race a shitbox. But do you know what I mean? If it's prepared by a quality team that we've kind of spoken about, it not being the latest and greatest model, I don't think it'd be a barrier for them coming because of, it's not the car they're racing in the World Tour and the rest of the year. I think Josh Buchan showed how well that car did at round one this year as well.
I think another option is, as I said, if we spend other people's money, just someone foots the bill and the endurance kits get put on the cars so they can refuel, and then you have a longer race, obviously, with co-drivers. Another option could be, they had a thing in South Africa in the mid-90s called the Rainbow Cup, where drivers from the British Touring Car Championship, for instance, and over Europe would go to South Africa and team up with the regulars in the local Super Touring Championship, and they'd share a car, but it'd be over four races, and one driver would do two races, another driver in the same car would do the other two races, and you'd work out a point score to sort of combine the results. Also a bit like Australian GT did at the Australian Grand Prix a few years ago.
Yes, actually, that worked all right, to be honest.
Yeah. So
you've almost got a team winner or a combo winner, and then an individual results as well.
But either way, it's got to be more than 2022 in terms of the international component.
Yes, yeah, no, exactly. You need something. As I said, it's about building on what we did last year. So, and that's where I think some continuity in terms of the faces. Like, I still think it'd be a smart idea to, you know, get a Will Brown or, do you know what I mean, get a Shane Van Gisbergen. But, do you know what I mean, something that gives a local Brody little in your face. Yeah, or they, do you know what I mean? I was still thinking that about round one when we were talking about it. I don't know if legally how that would have worked with all the goings on, but if someone at ARG could have just stuck him in a car for round one, like, that would have been huge.
Well, who knows? Imagine if he rolls out in the Lincoln Cove for Simmons Plains.
I was like, that's what it needs to take. And maybe, I don't know what, obviously no one knows what's in his contract. That's what they're fighting over. But, you know, the fact that Todd Hazelwood's driving for them now, but it's also driving these other things, like, I just think that, like, in hindsight, that could have been absolutely mental for Sandown. So let's, just someone with a bit of punch locally combined with the internationals. So,
the other option is to sort of go to other local TCR championships, like go to America, try and get Brian Herder's Hyundais to come out for Bathurst. And with that, you get Robert Wickens.
Robbie Wickens would be unreal.
Get go to South America and get Esteban Guerrero to come out with his Toyota, which would be very cool to have a Toyota in the
series. That was one. So I was like, obviously Toyota involved in the rally championship. There's been obviously chats going on for years about would we see a Toyota. So, like, yeah, if you get one, once again, we talk about it, get one here and then the car can stay. And, do you know what I mean? Whether Bates Motorsport or whoever runs that, you know, can run it next year or things like that. I think it's kind of like trying to be strategic with who you target and where you invest and, you know, what's kind of both the short and long-term benefits of that.
And so this is the last year of the original contract for the International. I guess if the World Tour does come back as they're intending to for 25, that's obviously the direction the event can continue in, hopefully. But if that's looking a bit shaky, what does the International do going forward if the TCR World Tour is not a component?
If this year's experiment works and you can get internationals, I still think that's a formula moving forward, right? Whether it's part of a World Tour or not. But it's working towards that, going back to that two-driver 500K thing, or that kind of mixed weekend, as you said. Because, yeah, you're right, we need to offer something unique about it. But as well, like, that's what I'm saying too. For it to have that, it's billed as the Bathurst International. I still think there's other categories as well that we can, you know, what we're doing in Trans Am, what we're doing. The GTs are running this year as well. In that makeup as well. And that's going to be a pretty mean field locally. So, Jeremy, there's lots of elements to the Bathurst International as well as just TCR, but TCR is obviously what it was built around. There's lots of future for the events. As we've touched on last time, I don't buy into this kind of people getting all down on like different Bathurst events taking away from other ones. Like, at least from what I've seen, no one's putting their hand up to run another event at Bathurst. People want to shit can the crowds and stuff, but, you know what I mean, as we experienced, we were there spending money in Bathurst for the internationals the last couple of years, and we weren't alone. Met guys from Perth who'd come over. So I was like, at the very least, there's money being spent in Bathurst, and I find it fascinating all of a sudden these media types who are so concerned about the economics of a regional town of Bathurst. I don't buy into or find any substance in some of these concerns about A, what it's taking away from other events, and B, that it's not a suitable use of a racetrack. So, yeah, I think there's still plenty of scope for the event with or without a TCR World Tour specifically.
Well, part of me wonders with Roland Dane's article that we'll touch on a bit more when we do our 12-hour wrap in the future, but his suggestion in his little wrap-up of the Bathurst 12-hour that perhaps Supercars ditches SRO from their involvement in the Bathurst 12-hour, given that SRO's now got a footprint in Australia running GT World Challenge Australia sort of on their own and GD4 Australia, do you think they'd ever possibly stick their hand up for the International as a little backup to the 12-hour? Should anything go astray with their involvement there?
I'm sure they would, right? Because it's obviously access to a race there. But mate, I don't put any substance in that comment by Roland Dane. It doesn't make any sense for GD3, that event, to try and run it without it. And many of the problems around that event are created by V8 Supercar rather than SRO. So, that article made me angry on a number of levels. Not to say that I think as well, the first three quarters of that article made a lot of sense. He raised some points, but that last kind of quarter, a couple of paragraphs, lost me entirely. So yeah, I don't think there's any risk of the 12-hour continuing without SRO in the short term.
But we'll talk more on the 12-hour coming up in a future podcast. But yeah, I think that the future of the international rests on basically TCR in terms of if the 12-hour continues with SRO and Supercars involvement, as we both expect it would, it'd make no sense for SRO to have another major international event at Bathurst 2 months beforehand.
But as well as the Bathurst International obviously does centre around the TCR and the international component of the TCR. But I did, like, whilst the local GT Championship is racing there, we've seen in the past with Chris Mees, Matt Campbell, and all these guys coming out to race with the various teams as well. I don't think we should underestimate that as an important part of the other categories that make up that event as well. Because I think that is what makes it strong. Makes it so unique as well, the quality of the categories that you get from TCR, Trans Am, which is, I'd love to see Formula Ford's back. Obviously, Formula Open, we're probably not going to get there with the current leadership at CAMS. So, still, the makeup of those events we've watched over the last 2 years there has been as good as any package that I've seen in the country. So,
and from memory, the two sort of rival bidders for that fifth Bathurst event were of Supercars with their sort of Goodwood Festival of Speed style picnic in the park thing, which I don't understand why you'd propose something at Bathurst that didn't involve car races around the track, but
they seem
pretty confident of it.
Yeah, and as we talked about as well, they've been active in trying to undermine the Bathurst International for years, which obviously we'll touch on later in a future podcast, but picked up a particularly high note during the 12-hour weekend. But, remember that, funnily enough, the Bathurst 12-hour reincarnation in 2006 came about through a Goodwood Festival speed event that was obviously run by Yeehaw Events back then, but then they ended up putting the 12-hour in because people complained there wasn't enough car racing and Bathurst wasn't a good place for for show cars and things like that. So, I don't think that's a great use of Mount Panorama, to be honest.
Yeah. And the other one from memory, the other sort of main bidder was the Cravantic 24-hour series proposing a 24-hour, which, cool in theory, we'd love a 24-hour to come back, but I think that would have been far too close to the 12-hour.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
So maybe the international as it stands, it's all or nothing in terms of a fifth event, but we'll wait and see. Hopefully this year's event goes all right and that can convince the Bathurst City Council to continue on with the event.
Yeah, definitely. I did read in one of the articles, they said there was a meeting between ARG and the Bathurst Council. I just hope that Motorsport Australia is involved in that and obviously supporting it as well, because the other thing too, despite that Festival Speed styled event we talked about, you just don't want a monopoly where one organisation, in this case V8 Supercars, feel like they're the only ones who can host an event around the place. So, and that's like, that's my greatest fear. And I don't think that's good for Australian motorsport. So, so you hope Motorsport Australia is involved in that. And yeah, we can keep some momentum, I should say, with the 24 event and then hopefully, build again for 25.
We'll touch quickly on round one, where the so-called maxed out and old Peugeots dominated proceedings with Ben Barguana taking two wins, Jordan Cox another win, and Josh Buchan was right up there with them. But it was quite dominant from Ben Barguana.
Yeah, wasn't that a big surprise? Here I was going that they were going to cling on to round three or four when the new ones came out, and they went three from three between Bargs and Jordan Cox. So, I'm very surprised. I think we said who was our one to look at in the preview podcast, and none of us had Bugs. So that was pretty clinical from him as well. When you look at the pressure that Josh Buchan put him under the end of race three, before obviously the Hyundai had a bit of trouble, but he held firm and drove a pretty clean race. So he was very impressive.
And Jordan Cox was really impressive as well, particularly race one, when he had his trouble, he didn't qualify and started off the back and ran his way up to fifth.
Yeah, he, from someone who was down in the dumps after practice and qualifying, having a real rough time of it, I remember one of the interviews on the grid, he basically said he wondered whether he should have actually turned up to then, you know, Sunday morning, take the race to reverse grid race, or sorry, as you said, stormed through race one, and then, yeah, strong reverse grid race and, yeah, little podium there for race three. So it was very good, and, yeah, been watching for years, waiting for him to convert. You never know. Maybe keeps hanging in there. 2024 could be his year.
Zach Suter hung in there with a couple of top five placings and just a very steady, smart performance, I thought. Stayed out of a lot of trouble and...
Yeah, wasn't his qualifying performance unbelievable as well? 7/100ths away from pole. So he really stood up over the weekend. New two-car team, always well presented, his program there. But, yes, yeah, so I think just barely missing out from pole, and then his whole weekend he just barely missed the podium. So three fourth places, really good pace, consistent, and hung in there. So, yeah, disappointed he couldn't sneak onto the podium. But yeah, you know, there was some quality in front of him. So I think that was really good for his season ahead.
It's funny if you look at the results. Obviously, the Peugeot's dominant. Josh Buchan in the old Hyundai up the front. Tony D'Alberto was amongst the front runners, but not quite on the front running pace in the new Honda. Obviously, the newer Lincoln Co. was further down the order. Clay Richards did pretty good in the Cupra, but he wasn't on the pace of the Peugeots or the Buchan Hyundai. So it's funny, the older cars are the ones doing the winning, and you sort of wonder why. It should give hope to someone with an older Audi or something, or dare I say it, an Alpha, that it may be worth having a crack. Do you wonder why? Is it maybe the straights? There's maybe a bit less downforce on the Gen 1 style cars, or...?
Yeah, I reckon it probably is circuit specific. The Peugeots, I'd remember in 22 and things like that, always were pretty good going up and down the tube, so to speak. So, yeah, I think they were pretty helpful in terms of where they were racing at, the Sandown makeup. But equally, I was surprised the Honda didn't quite have the speed in straight line as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, that had showed really well at the back end of last year at Sydney Motorsport Park and Bathurst in particular.
Well, he was on pole at Bathurst.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, oh, yeah, obviously pretty good in a straight line. So, yeah, that threw me a little bit, to be honest. I thought, I honestly thought D'Alberto would have been looking at taking one of those race wins over the weekend. And, gentlemen, like, he finished third in race one, but he's 15 seconds behind. Oh, sorry. 12 seconds behind Ben Barguana. So, that was a little bit perplexing. And that Lincoln Co., it's like the quicker they can lean on someone at Scion Racing to help them get that car sorted. I read a comment from Dylan O'Keefe. He said they moved the car forward over the weekend, but still they were struggling with a few little setup issues. So, he's a good steerer, and to see that hovering around, you know, 10th, 11th, 12th over the weekend was probably not its potential.
Well, we haven't heard an announcement going forward for future events, but hopefully O'Keefe sticks with it because he's a driver who should be able to get the best out of it. And same with Clay Richards in the Cupra. Hopefully he pushes on for some more rounds.
Yeah, I think having some continuity for both those, unless, like, for example, that Lincoln Co., is potentially the car that, as we said, gets a Brody Kostecki or someone else in it. But I do think if that's going to happen, it makes sense for it to be one of the GRM mobiles as well. But, yeah, I think continuity of cars and drivers is vital for this series.
TV coverage, I thought pretty good.
Very good.
You wouldn't have really noticed the difference. Obviously, pretty much the same on-air talent. Coverage of the races was pretty good. And no one could complain about not being able to see it. So I think a pretty good start for the sort of the rebuilding of the Speed Series as a whole.
Yeah, I was going to say too, it was professionally done, no real changes from last year. And as you said, they got on the main channel for two of the three races, all came across smoothly. So I was thrilled. I thought it was really good. People promoting it. And yeah, as said, I'd be fascinated to see what it does to the numbers, but at the very least, it just takes out an element of all the people who complained they couldn't watch it. So now they people are either getting behind it, or you know, at least if they're not whinging about it. So yeah,
they've got one less reason to complain. They have to find another one to
try and
talk it all down.
As you saw over the weekend too, people were complaining about the ads, which I have zero time for that. So
So on to round two, Simmons Plains. You'd think off the top of your head, it'll probably be similar running order to Sandown, given they're similar-ish sort of tracks, slow corners with long straights. So you'd say we're assuming Buchan will still be in the hatch, and the Peugeots presumably will be up the front as well.
You think that too, but I've been caught out in the past trying to go from circuit to circuit and assuming it would carry over. So I don't disagree with that statement, but I wouldn't be surprised to maybe see Zach Suter might maybe even lead the pack. We are 12 months from when, you remember, the Audis were ditching drive shafts there last year?
Yep.
That was I'll put that slight in the side. And as well, we'll see, as I said, I go back to the straight line performance of the Honda at Bathurst last year, and I just wonder whether, even though we didn't see it at Sandown, whether that might suit the Simmons Plains there as well. But yeah, I'd be looking at your Bargs, your Buchans, and then throwing your Zach Suters and your Tony D's as the one there. I don't think Lincoln Cole will be there just yet. So Ryan Casher was another one who kind of really solid opening got up there. Aaron Cameron had a bit of a quieter weekend, so he's another one who can hopefully cash in on that Peugeot speed a little bit. But I was disappointed to see him have a tougher weekend.
You got a tip?
My tip was way off from round one. But I'll get behind Suter for the weekend. And as my bolter, I will Tom Oliphant. He's due a stronger weekend.
All right. Should we say by bolter we mean who'll win the reverse grid race?
Yeah, it's probably not a bad shout, actually.
We'll call that. Yeah. All right, yeah. All right, yeah. That sounds good. Well, because I was gonna go Aaron Cameron. I think he'll get a win or two.
Yeah.
In the normal races. And reverse grid, hoping he's there, Clay Richards.
Yes, yeah.
In the Cupra.
Yeah.
I think that'd be great. But it should be
and great, that great car. So that's
with our friend Carl Cox, after we said hello to him at the Bathurst International last year.
Great supporter. So great to still have him see him on there.
Yeah, I mean, when I say that, you yelled out hello, and he waved and kept on driving, but that's good enough for us.
Yeah, yeah.
And then hopefully, obviously, it's unlikely we'll see – we haven't seen an entry list yet for round two, but, I mean, it's unlikely, you'd think, given it's in Tasmania, that we'll have some new entries there. But hopefully, despite the two steps back, which the cancellation of the international – or the World Tour cars coming to the international will have – hopefully the first two rounds back on 15 cars, which is okay given where we were. Hopefully by the time we get to round three, we can start seeing a car or two on the grid build up each round, and who knows where we are by the time we get to the end of the year at Bathurst.
So excited, hopefully, to see that grow, and obviously when the new Peugeots come along too. And if we can retain some of those, the older Peugeots as well as entry levels into the category, I think we can, hopefully start to see that grid evolve.
Oh, thanks for joining me.
It's always a pleasure, Luke.
And we'll be back very soon. Got more podcasts on the way. So we look forward to you joining us then. Thanks for listening.